this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time.
Welcome to Wellness and Dentistry. I'm one of your hosts, Dr. Martin Mendelson, a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, thought leader, and author. And today, as is in every episode, I'm joined by my good friend and colleague, Dr. Kyle Stanley, who's a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness and dentistry. And if you're unfamiliar with us, we invite you to check out our respective links, websites, and course offerings. And speaking of which, if you'd like to hang out with us in person, because we're tons of fun, our next version of Lightside Live, our in-person experience, will be held this May 9th and 10th at Glidewell Dental Laboratory in beautiful Southern California, and is good for 12 CE credits. And so today is a very special day because this is episode number 50. And we're going to be talking about the last 49 episodes, talking about lessons, takeaways, personal experiences, and what we might tell our younger selves as it relates to what we learned from the past 49 lessons. So, Kyle, happy 50th anniversary.
Yeah, I know. I wish I had like confetti or a cake or something special, but we have our matching black shirts and our gratitude, I think.
Yes, exactly.
We've talked about a lot of stuff over the last 49 episodes. There's so much learning that has been had by our listeners and by us. You know, selfishly, Martin and I learn as we go. We learn from each other. We learn from you guys who message us and tell us that you love the podcast and how much you're getting out of it and how you've utilized it with your team or with your patients or with your family. So that's definitely great. When I think about some of our past episodes, looking back, I think about one, which is, do dentists even care? For those of you that haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. But basically, I was talking with someone and they said, you know, I feel like dentists don't care enough. This is a non-dentist.
Yeah.
And I was blown away because for Martin and I, and for, you know, for you, if you've been in the dental field, what you realize is many times we care too much. Amen. We care so much that we're willing to die for our profession. We care so much that we're willing to let our health go into a poor place, our relationships go into a poor place, even our businesses suffer because we care so much for our patients, for our clinical work. And that was a really powerful episode for me. It's been a big learning for me too, after having that episode, thinking through that process.
Yeah, 100%. You know, in coaching world, we talk about being unattached to the result. And I remember my first coaching certification, they talked about don't jump into somebody else's bag, meaning, you know, luggage, and various different incarnations of that concept. And we were just on one of your group coaching sessions from your Facebook group. And, you know, this kind of came up around this one dentist's journey from Australia, who was talking about how one of the biggest lessons she's learned is, you know, don't take on your patient's, you know, expectations or you know, emotions relative to care. It's like, look, that's on them in terms of their compliance and their decisions to go forward with treatment or not. And so we end up caring so much that we end up getting caught up and connect something that we talk about a lot, our identity with even a patient's simple yes to a case presentation, because we make it about ourselves and our lack of ability to help them, which is altruistic, but also kind of dangerous, right?
Yeah, I even created a little framework around this topic called the Dentist Care Wellness Curve. Mm-hmm. And it basically has how much you care on the x-axis and your wellness on the y-axis. Mm-hmm. So as you go right, you care more. And as you go up, your wellness gets better, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And what I find is it's really a bell-shaped curve. So in the center, you have the people that care enough, they're doing good dentistry, but they're not having the anxiety and the depression and the guilt
Yeah.
that they are in, they're thriving really. And
Yeah.
because of this, they have more wellness. Now, further to the right, at the right side of the bell, you have what I call maybe the robot dentists. These are the dentists that are so obsessed with dentistry, care so much about the clinical that they, to their detriment, right?
Oh,
That that's
yeah.
all they think about. They're obsessed with it. And then you have the dentists on the left that don't care enough. And these are less often, but these are the unethical dentists. They're doing
Yeah.
poor work. They're doing fraud. They're greedy. And I would call this like the no morals dentist. So just from this episode, it really allowed me to boil down my thoughts on this one little comment that came from a non-dentist.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I've never mentioned this before, but these are universal constructs. Even do dentists even care? And would talk about the idea that they care too much. I have a really good friend who lives in Sacramento. Hi, Stephen, who tells me he listens to every episode that we publish, and he owns an IT support firm. Now, irony
Great.
of ironies, he has a lot of dentist office clients,
Oh, that is ironic.
but how interesting is that? Because I think so often we get confused or have this fallacy that what we do is unique. And we've talked a lot about this recently in recent episodes that, when our chair's reclined and our patient's mouth is open, what we do is unique. But everything that gets them to the chair to say yes at the chair and out of the chair isn't. And, this one data point of my friend Steven, who's not even a dentist, who gets so much out of our discussions because, as anybody who knows has even heard one episode, we're not talking about, case acceptance and treatment planning and margins. We're talking about us as humans and, personal wellness, practice wellness, and everything wellness that orbits around being a dentist.
It happens to me all the time. I will be speaking, giving a course on mental health for dentists, and there is the spouse of a dentist that's there, or there is a sponsor that's there that is has nothing to do. Like, they work for a bank, right? And afterwards they come up to me saying, "Wow, I got so much out of this. I know that you were talking mostly for dentists and dental professionals, but what you said really resonated with me." I get this on my Instagram too. My friends from high school or my friends from college or, non-dental friends that still follow me. And if you follow me, I mean, 98% of what I post is about dentist wellness, right? And the other parts are Porsches and my family. So, but I have friends that say, like, I really love your Instagram. Because I applied it to my business or I applied it to my family. And that's so cool. It's really nice to know that we can help others, maybe even outside of our profession, even though you and I are so niche. I mean, the title of this podcast is Wellness in Dentistry, right?
Well, to your point about the spouses being there, the non-dentist being there and getting something out of it, what we when we each do keynotes, we're doing keynotes that are very different and very related at the same time. You're doing a lot of research-backed discussions around, anxiety, depression, burnout, triggers, what your fantastic ripple framework, where the first step is realize. And then on the other side, I come in and I'm talking about the science of optimism, and how it affects visualization, cognition, diagnostic prowess. I tell lots of fun stories. I give people my team framework of thoughts lead to emotions that drive actions that manifest results. So they're different, but very much related and almost in parallel. And again, I've branched out, I think, a little bit more than you relative to non-dental audiences. And it's the same keynote that I gave at the LA Dental Symposium that I will give at a 5,000 person tech conference, meaning the backbone of it is the same. But I just use dental examples versus life examples because we are human beings that happen to practice dentistry, not dentists, which is, something you say all the time, right?
Yeah. Well, what's another episode that we did that really resonated with you, Martin?
Well, I think, I love team. And so, the whole idea around building healthy practice culture by prioritizing mental health. I really like that one because it
You're
goes
the
to
guy for that. I mean, I
well,
just referred you to someone yesterday for the Idaho Dental Association that I'm going to be speaking at this year because they said, we're really trying to do more on team involvement and cohesion. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to introduce you, Mark.
Well, thank you for that. And it's, when you take a step back and you just look at team more holistically from the standpoint of understanding, okay, so these are human beings. So what drives human beings? And so often one of the very first things I talk about is Maslow's hierarchy. And so it's a hierarchy of needs. And without going into it, the second rung after being fed and watered for psychological need, or sorry, physiologic needs, is safety needs, which is actually two pronged. It's psychological safety and physical safety. And this is where dental practices get stuck because
I
they,
never knew this, Martin. And the first time I heard you say psychological safety, it made so much sense to me. And it's become part of my vernacular, thanks to you. And can you explain, you've explained it before in our courses and whatnot, but can you explain a little bit about how setting expectations and creating psychological safety, let's say you have a new associate or a new front office team member or a new person doing sterilization.
So, Amy Edmondson is a PhD researcher, and she defined team psychological safety as team members feeling that it's okay to basically speak up, challenge, ask questions without fear of judgment or reprisal. So, in other words, there's no risk to putting up your hand and saying, as the phrase goes, Houston, we got a problem. And so the deployment of that, or let me rephrase, the lack of existence of that causes so many problems because people don't know how to deal with them because they're afraid to speak up. And so if you can establish a culture where it's okay to speak up in the appropriate context, because lest us never forget that we're treating patients. And so bringing something up in front of a patient in many ways could be wholly inappropriate. However, we can do so in a morning huddle or a weekly meeting or a monthly meeting. And so having that in place, and one of the things I do with teams is actually creating an alliance and understanding of what that looks like, bringing in a new team member into that construct where you bring them in and say, okay, this is Susie or Johnny. They're our new ex team member. This is our practice alliance. This is what's important to us. It's very important for us to be able to be honest with each other and to be able to put our hand up when things are going south. These are the words that describe the kind of practice we want to be in every day. How we're going to show up when there are challenges, how we want to keep each other accountable. What else, what do you feel about that, Johnny or Susie? How does that resonate with you? And what things would you like us to consider adding to this alliance? So you're creating this ownership so that you are fostering psychological safety, which can go a long way to fostering mental health, because nobody wants to get in their car every day and be anxious every day coming to the office. Like, oh my gosh, what a terrible way to live. Which
And
unfortunately many people do.
this relates back to the revolving door of team members that so many dentists around the world are complaining about. I can't find a dental assistant, I can't find a front office, I can't find a hygienist, can't find an office manager. But their team doesn't have this psychological safety. They haven't built a healthy practice culture. On our last episode, I mentioned that I was talking with JJ Gomez, who is one of the partners in DSD. He's helped over 130 practices get started up or grow. And I asked him, what do you think the biggest problem that dentists make? And he said, toxic culture. He didn't say their margins aren't good enough, their smile design isn't good enough, their implants aren't great. He said, toxic culture. And he said, when I go into a practice, I can tell within the first few minutes.
Amen. And I can't even put it into words what that actually means. It's almost like a spidey sense. And This is the thing that I think a lot of dentists aren't okay with, yet it's still a reality. And just because you don't align with the facts doesn't make the facts untrue. And so, dental practice and working within one isn't for everyone. And oftentimes, and I know this from my other colleagues in coaching and team facilitation world, so many of us will go into work within a given practice and get that spidey sense almost immediately. And then those team members that don't want to play nice in the sandbox end up self-selecting out. And truthfully, that's a wonderful thing because then we get to part ways without having to force it one way or the other. And people are then therefore electing to be there or not be there. And so there are certain team members that are still there because of the toxic culture. And so when you start turning it around and flipping the coin over, all of a sudden they go, oh, wait, I'm going to be called out for this behavior, whether they realize it or not. And then they end up self-selecting out and it becomes a happy day. And nobody wants to lose a team member, but by the same token, how terrible is it to drive your office every day and wonder how your assistant or your front office, whoever, how horrible is it to be worried how they're going to quote be that day? And by the way, same goes for doctors. How horrible is it for the team to worry about
Ask any
which
team
doctor's going
member.
to show up, right?
Well, when I was going through burnout, I was frustrated with my team for sure. I had big frustrations with them. And looking back on it, I take on a lot of that. I don't think I was the leader. I don't think we had psychological safety. I don't think that I and my partners were explaining things well enough, creating that psychological safety. And so it's funny how at the time you would ask me, and I would say, my staff is driving me crazy, my patients are driving me crazy. But so much of it was things that I could have controlled, or at least tried to control, you know, with it's like when you think about patients too, is like, my patients are driving me crazy, but no one can drive you crazy.
Correct.
They can do something and you can choose how to react to it. And that was a big lesson learned for me. So I agree with you. I think building a healthy practice culture by prioritizing mental health was a great episode. And there's a lot of learnings in there. When
Absolutely.
I look back at our list too, another one that really stood out to me was creating boundaries. Why saying no in dentistry can save your mental health.
I knew you were going to go there next because I could sense it. And it's funny because I even want to connect it to what you were just talking about before, relative to creating a supportive culture, because there are times there, and in some cases, many times over the course of a career, where patients are inappropriate, and how we handle those things, talking about boundaries is incredibly important. And I remember even at Spear, this is going back well over a decade ago, there was a certain incident. We had to come to the aid of one of our team members and ask the doctor not to come back again. And I got to tell you, the sense of camaraderie and support for that team member, because we put her first, not the business, the case acceptance in the case of a practice, et cetera. And so creating boundaries in every element and every aspect of practice is critically important, because setting up a boundary of not tolerating poor behavior, whether that's from patients or team, setting and maintaining those boundaries will create a positive culture so dramatically and so quickly, because people feel, again, going back to Maslow, safe. And so that's incredibly important.
It's so true. And when you set boundaries with patients, especially if you're protecting your team members. So let's say you have that gentleman that says inappropriate things to your female or male associate or team member of any type, and you hear about it, And then you talk to this person, whether you dismiss the person or whether you have a chat with them and say, this can't happen again. This doesn't happen in this practice. And if it does, you will be dismissed. Talk about creating safety, feeling protected. It could even be physically protected. I've said this before, but your team will crawl through glass for you if you stick up for
Oh,
them.
yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, I've mentioned him before, but he's retired now, but Jeff Rowe, who helped build LVI and then helped build Spear, he was such a consummate leader. And I can tell you for a fact, everybody that worked for him, including me, would walk over coals or glass for that man because he had high standards, yet he was wholly supportive and he saw us as people. And he wouldn't let you get away with anything, but by the same token, if you needed something, that man was there.
What an
And
incredible way to describe a leader. Everything you just said. It's like, gosh, can you imagine if you are a practice owner and your team described you as that? Because you didn't say, like, he was really easy on us. We could do whatever we want. You said, no, he kept his standards. We did great work, but he understood us as people. He supported us. So I'm sure it wasn't easy to work for him, right? It's not like it was easy.
No,
But
it
the
felt easy
business,
though.
well, that's a huge difference, right? Because you're right. It's a lot easier to work with people when there is that safety.
The other person I worked for also at Spear that I've talked about before that I'd like to mention again is Suraj Mohandas. And he looked at me and said, "Can you imagine a dentist saying this to a team member? You ready?" He said, "Listen, I view my role with you as not your boss." He goes, "Yes, of course, there's certain things that we have to maintain relative to employment." He said, "We can't get away with that." He said, "But you know what my role is?" He said, "My role is to help you pave a path, to help you get stuff out of your way, so that you can do your best stuff for our clients at Spear." Like, holy smokes. I sat there dumbfounded because nobody had ever said it to me in that way before. And if you think about it, in dental practice, we all need each other. Like, nobody in the dental practice can do what they do without the other parties. And so, whether it's an assistant, a hygienist, or somebody on your administrative team, how cool of a conversation would that, or let me rephrase, how cool of a conversation would you have if you ended up starting out that way? Because they're not doing what it is you do as the clinician. They're supporting what you do as the clinician. And therefore, it makes sense to think about how can we reduce barriers to allow my assistant to be the best assistant, to be the best hygienist, to be the best scheduler or insurance, mediator, et cetera.
Yeah, this idea of boundaries cannot be understated. I
No,
think
no.
it's one of the biggest things that I suffered with. It's one of the things that I really contribute to my burnout happening. And we've heard it from hundreds of dentists from around the world that it is something that most people, I mean, most humans suffer with. First of all, let's be very specific. This isn't a dental problem. This is a human problem. When you have these boundaries, it allows you to pick your patients. It allows you to be more present where you are. It allows you to set expectations better. It allows you to communicate better. All of those things contribute to being happier in your work and being happier in your life.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, many of you know I don't practice clinically anymore because I had problems with my hand, but I do the same thing with my coaching clients. Like, both of our time is valuable. And so if you show up late, I'll still see you, but if you show up 10 minutes late, we're gonna talk for 50 minutes. But and so I set those expectations, I set those boundaries. And truthfully, when I was a younger coach, a more less experienced coach, I had certain clients years ago that kind of took advantage of little things here or there, nothing significant, but I am very clear on my worth now relative to time. And I haven't had a problem with it. I'm very upfront. I'm like, "Listen, whenever we make an appointment together, I expect both parties are making that appointment, assuming that this is the best chance for us
Yes.
to be able to meet together. If it's got to get canceled the last minute, if it's, if it's for a legitimate reason, fine. If it's for something that got in your way that we didn't count on, well, then we're going to forfeit that session and there'll be a charge for it. It's the same as dental practice. There's no
Well, I think
difference.
of when I am going to another doctor, right? So I had orthopedic surgery, so I was dealing with hospitals and all surgeons and that kind of stuff. Or even when I take my son to whatever, I took him to an ENT in this last year. They take a credit card on file and they tell me about the cancellation fee, right? I'm never like, oh my God, wait, why do you need my credit card? Why? Because I'm planning on showing up. If they're not planning on showing up, then they're going to say things like, oh, wait, why do you need my credit card? You know? And these are
And
these kind of willy-nilly patients. And these are the patients that we need to build these boundaries for.
well, and kind of side note, it kills me how many dental practices don't have a credit card on file for this kind of thing. And there are legal, ethical ways to keep a credit card on file through credit card tokenization that, most, if not all, the dental practice management softwares have these days. And at, like you just said, with the other kind of medical allied medical professionals, it becomes a non-issue. It becomes a non-discussion. It's like, no, we have it on file. I've said this before. I'm vain. I go and I get Botox. She has my credit card on file. Like it's never an issue, right? And it's like we said before, we need to start getting out of our own way and understanding that what we do is not unique, except when the patient's reclined with their mouth open, period.
Okay, what episode may that we did the last 49 episodes, can't we do this? Stupid at 49 may stick out to you.
It's related, and I was thinking about this as we were talking recently, the whole start, stop, or get better to be happier in dentistry. And I think it goes to, your realize concept where, the first step to make a change is realize where you are. And if there may be clinical procedures, there may be other types of administrative procedures that you either need to start, stop, or get better at to be happier in dentistry. And the unfortunate thing is there's so much talk these days about integrating specialty procedures into your practice for production dollars. And I'm not going to say none, but very few then follow it up with, well, you also need to do a time and motion study to understand that just because you're charging X for a root canal or Y for a single implant placement, if it takes you three times longer than certain restorative procedures, it's not worth it. So, yeah, that really resonated with me because,
I had this experience exactly what you're talking about with aligners.
That's a great example. I didn't even
So
use
I
that.
was like, aligners, okay, we charge 4 or 5 grand for them, and gosh, so easy. You do some attachments, you may have to do some IPR, and you throw some aligners every 6, 8 weeks, and but then you start having mid-treatment revisions that you have to do, and then you have to do three more at the end, and you if you actually started analyzing this, it's like I made $20 an hour on this patient. Like
It's
I could have worked
crazy.
at McDonald's and made more money on this, right? And I actually advise a dental tech company now called Two Front, and Ingrid, you were on our other podcast that I do with her. And this is exactly why she started doing what she's doing, is because she's an orthodontist. And even as an orthodontist, she was realizing how inefficient her aligner treatment was. And so she started outsourcing certain parts of it for GP. And it's crazy how, when you look at the hour per hour, which you and I are very big on numbers, I encourage you, especially if you're doing aligners, I mean, this is a great way to start, is look at how much you're charging, how much your lab bill is, and be very honest at how many hours in the chair you're spending, and then
Mm-hmm.
look and see if you made any money on this.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'll look, I'm human, very, very, very human. I'll use myself as an example. I asked you for your bookkeeper's name that you've been using for the last 10 years. I just had a, I forgot to tell you, I had a conversation with her yesterday. She's fantastic.
Oh, good.
And the reason why I went there is exactly the reason, the exactly the thought process of what we're talking about. We're recording this in, late February of 2025, and I had just gone through the whole process of getting ready for taxes, et cetera. And I thought to myself, I've spent almost a week worth of time getting stuff together that could just be handed to me by employing her services. And when I did the math, I was like, holy smokes, I am wasting so much time and money by
Yeah.
doing this myself. And so it's sometimes it is a mathematical calculation that you need to do, but I would invite you to do it. And when you do it, sometimes it's rather enlightening, frankly, right?
Yeah, so that episode, Start, Stop, or Get Better to Be Happier in Dentistry, I also summarized that and made a post on it. So this is what I came up with was start doing something, start dismissing patients. Start setting boundaries. Start prioritizing your mental and relational health. Stop doing something. Stop only focusing on clinical abilities. Stop seeing patients during your lunch break. Stop accepting every patient into your practice. So it's funny how those all relate to what we've talked about before, right? Setting boundaries, building a healthy practice culture. Do dentists even care? And then the last one, get better at something, would be get better at communication, get better at setting expectation, and get better at crucial conversations, which is something that you and I teach in our Lightside Live course.
And what kills me about this subject too, which just popped into my brain, is the whole you made a mention about having, making sure you take your lunch. Like, how many times have we heard, I never have time for lunch, or I never have time to pee?
Yep.
Like, and I, maybe it's partially age and maturity, but now I look at people and I go, well, whose fault's that?
Yeah.
Well, I'm so busy. And I just look and I smile and I shake my head and I'm like, nope, that is your decision, my friend. It is your decision, with very rare exception, to allow the continued violation of, let's call it, a scheduling template of putting patients in your lunch hour. And if you are finding that you're having a significant enough emergencies where there's nowhere to put them except for lunch, again, numbers don't lie. Do an evaluation, understand the patient flow, understand the patient needs, and take a note from our endodontic colleagues and plan every day or every other day, whatever works for you from the numbers, time to see those emergency. Call up your local endodontist and ask how they do it, because they're masters at this, because a good portion of their total production is emergencies. We all know that. So stop trying to reinvent the wheel and ask for their help, as an example.
Yeah, the endodontic model is wild. So in my building, there's 52 dentists in my building, by the way. I think there's only one endodontist, and they're brothers. They're awesome, awesome guys here in Rami. And I know sometimes I would be at the bathroom because we have a shared bathroom on our floor. So I would be at the bathroom, and it'd be early before patients come in, and I'd be like, "Oh, hey, Harry, how's the schedule for you? You busy today?" And he'd be like, "I've got nobody on my schedule. Zero." And I was like, "Oh, wow, that's crazy. Like, super slow day for you." He's like, "You never know. I could be twiddling my thumbs, or I could have 15 patients." And I remember one day specifically where I saw him in the bathroom, talked to him. He had no one on the schedule. And I saw him at the end of the day walking out. "Oh, how'd it turn out?" And he was like dead, like, sluggish. And he was like, "We saw 20 patients or something today." And I'm like, "Holy crap, that is crazy."
And for some, they have such wonderful methodologies to figure this stuff out. Like, I'm very fortunate to hang out a lot with Dr. Lou Berman, who's one of the authors of Pathways of the Pulp, and he used to teach at Spear, and I loved listening to his scheduling lecture. because he went through the whole process of typically patients will call their GP first. They'll call when they open around 8. So we then have an emergency slot every day at 9 because it gives them travel time. And then often they won't call until lunch. And so it was this really
Wow.
wild, really well thought out scheduling methodology that even included, okay, so if I'm going to have a second molar in this spot, I can, book toward the beginning or the end something that's more straightforward, typically, like a bicuspid or a single canal tooth. And it's just so interesting. And it just goes to the idea that, look, is everything going to fall into those neat little boxes every day? Absolutely not. But would you rather have the exceptions be the exception or the exceptions be the rule? It becomes your choice. What would you like to do?
When you were talking about having people scheduled during your lunchtime too, a thing that came to me was, have you looked at raising your fees?
Yeah.
I mean, you and I have talked to dentists that say, I'm so burnt out because I'm booking 6 months out.
Yeah.
Like, if
Yeah.
you're booking 6 months out as a
Yeah.
dentist,
Yeah.
you have way too many patients.
Yep.
So we need to start looking at the one that I don't like as much, which would be expanding. I think that's much more challenging. That means second office, more build out, adding another chair, adding more team members, much more challenging than staying lean and mean, supply and demand. I mean, if you have so many patients that you're booked 6 months out, or even that your hygienist is booked 6 months out, raise your fees. Or start bringing people in on Saturdays, and I'm not saying for the dentist to come in on Saturdays, but I'm saying, let's say it's a hygiene thing. Your hygiene is booked out 6 months. Start seeing people on Saturdays. Find a hygienist that just wants to work on Saturdays. There's probably plenty of them,
Do you
or
know
just
when I
wants to
was
do nights.
When I was 16, when I started in a dental office, I would work on the weekends. And Saturday morning, this decent sized practice turned into the Children's Dental Center. And all we saw from like 8 in the morning till 1 in the afternoon was kids. And so it was kid after kid, like kid pro fees are not that long.
Yeah,
And
right.
so Mary Alice, I still remember her name, the hygienist, she was awesome with the children. She would do kid after kid. And I was like the hygiene assistant. That's where I kind of got my start. And it just made sense because it kept the, shall we say, the roster of hygiene clearer during the week because we could get all these kids through on the weekend. It was a great idea. It was a
Well,
really
one
good.
thing that Scott Luna says, who I've learned so much from, he's in Texas. He's had his hand in over 200 startups. He said there's really, and I'm paraphrasing this, but there's really a fallacy of growing is the way to do it. And growing comes with so much more problems.
Oh, amen.
I mean, you talk to anybody who has multiple practices, most of them aren't saying, like, yeah, everything's good. Like, I have, all these people work for me and I just kind of hang out. Like, no, they're not. I
No.
think the people that truly have, that are making good money, that are more relaxed, are these
Yep.
lean and mean practices that get paid well, many times are out of network with insurance. They have smaller staff, they have a smaller patient base. But I think that's challenging for doctors that have their identity attached to their profession. So let's go back to that example where you're booked 6 months out, you're the hottest practice in your city or in your town, you're making good money, but you're so stressed out because patients are pissed off. They can't get in for hygiene, they can't get in for emergencies, you don't know what to do. You end up working all hours of the day. You're there till 8 p.m. You're not seeing your kids. You're not seeing your spouse. You have no time to exercise. You're not sleeping well. For to talk to a dentist like that and say, 30% of your patients are going to leave, will freak them out. However, after talking with hundreds of dentists that have done this, the ones that can make that, separation between their identity and their profession, and understand that this is a business. You can still do good dentistry. You can do fantastic dentistry, maybe even better dentistry by getting rid of 30% of those patients. They're not going to be abandoned. You're not abandoning them, but they will
Now,
self-select out.
well, it's funny because I think this is going to be released late March, early April. And in April, I authored a case study article that's going to be in Dental Economics about our mutual friend, Dr. Don Anderson, who did exactly what you just said. And there's a quote by Don in the article that basically says, "I've had the best team that I've had in 27 years." He, and you know, you can go ahead and read the article, but basically he, you know, scaled up because he felt like he needed to, because he was on the insurance treadmill, and then
And
finally
that's what
things,
everyone says to do, too.
yeah. And then he got to a breaking point, and then he started to have some team cohesion challenges, et cetera. Now he's gotten out of insurances, but he didn't just cut the cord. He did it purposefully. He did it in a data-driven system and methodology. He worked with consultants to figure out how, when, and is this feasible? And now he's scaled back. He's got a team half the size, and he's happier than he's ever been. Taking more time off, going to CE. He's going to be here in Phoenix tomorrow. We're going to go out to dinner. You know, so it is so true, and it is so scary. And so oftentimes when we feel that fear coming in, the realities can help be the best antidote to fear, meaning what's the real fact? You know, am I telling myself this or is this true? Or as my favorite question is, how true is that? Well, you know, if I stop taking insurances, all my patients are going to go away. Well, how true is that? What does your data show? How many patients do you have that actually don't have insurance, as an example?
Yeah, I can't remember if it was Don, because you and I have been working with Don for a long time. He's a fantastic supporter, and we've seen him through having being scared of this, right?
Oh,
And you know, and
absolutely.
he's okay with us sharing this.
Yes, he is.
And then seeing him still do it and then feel so much better. And seeing Don go through this process is very real. And I can't remember if it was Don or if it was someone else, but we did an exercise where we looked at how many of your patients, for example, that he was getting out of network, okay, with insurance. And we said, how many of your patients are in network? And it was like, you know, 70% of my patients are in network. Okay, what is the discount on average of your UCR fees to your in-network fees? And it was like, and say 40% or 50, I mean, sometimes 60%, depending. And then so we said, okay, if you lost 30% of your patients, send out that letter and say, we're not taking your insurance anymore, and 30% don't come back. I remember in this specific example, and again, I can't remember if it was Don or someone else, they would make $50,000 more doing 30% less dentistry.
And it's ironic because not in every situation, but in many, many situations, for whatever reason, that 30% number is almost like a standard where it's like, yeah, you could lose 30%. And not only are you fine, you're more than fine, you're working less, you're less stressed out, et cetera. So, but again, the people that are the most successful at this are the ones that do it in a data-driven way to really truly understand what's going on. Because the other thing that a lot of them experienced, I know Don included, is some of them, you know, if you're running a practice like Don that's, you know, comprehensive and, you know, really great communication, et cetera, they go somewhere else and they go, "Holy smokes, we're not in Kansas anymore." And then they come back.
Yeah.
Now, granted, that's a smaller percentage, of course.
Yes.
But it happens. Ask any dentist who's got away from third-party reimbursement. They all say the same thing. They
Yeah, I
lost
mean, one
X
of
and then
the I
Y for Y.
just had someone comment on one of my Instagram posts where I was saying how challenging dentistry is. And this dentist said, you know, with the insurance reimbursement going down so significantly, this is creating so much stress on dentists. And I just responded back, have you considered going out of network? Because you and I like to talk about focusing on what you can control. So let's talk about insurance for a second. For those of you that are in North America, at least, or maybe in the US, is that you can't control how much the insurance pays you. So what can you do? Well, you can apply for new fees every year. I know there's companies that do this. You can do it yourself. or you can go out of network.
Yeah.
And so if you're not going to do something about it, I would say forget about it.
Yeah. And it's like we say all the time, it's super simple, but it's not easy.
Yes.
And so the decision is easy. I've said this before in keynotes. The decision is easy. It's what follows that's hard. But the interesting thing is, in my upcoming book, I talk about this framework around notice, breathe, commit, and then act. So it's
I love this.
NBCA. So when you come upon something, it's like, okay, notice you're getting squirrely inside. Breathe, take a moment, commit to an action, and then act. Because the different, because they're committing between your ears is not the same as actually doing the action or completing the action. They're two separate things. And sometimes fear is what gets in the way of actually taking that first step, even though that's the first step you need to take. But if we can notice, breathe, commit, and then act, I know it sounds trite, but a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. There have been fewer truer statements out there that have ever been uttered than that one.
I
So.
learned this from you, I think, maybe at our last Lightside Live. And I used it like the next week. And I think I told you about this. And I've continued to use it. Now, again, it doesn't mean it's easy,
Nope.
but I at least have the self-awareness now to know that, to have that first step, to have that notice.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to act correctly if you haven't started at the beginning, which is having that notice. That's that self-awareness. Going back to my ripple theory, is the realize and realizing that something has changed. When you're talking about that episode of start, stop, or get better to be happier, we really already talked about it, but one of the episodes that I really loved is the hidden cost of tying your identity to your career. So we
Yeah.
really already talked about it when you talked about, okay, having a patient on your lunch break, setting boundaries, being booked so far out and maybe raising your fees or going out of network or something and losing patients, saying no to patients, having boundaries. So much of that stems from tying your identity to your career.
Yeah, 100%. And your sense of worth to your career. I know I mentioned this before. One of my coaching clients, a general dentist, was telling me that one of the things that they're challenged with is, they've been in practice over 20 years and they feel rather confident, yet when they're in a procedure and it starts going not according to plan, which happens how many times a day? They sit there and they say to themselves, shouldn't this be easier? I've been at this 20 years. That was their talk track. And my
I've said that before to
response,
myself.
yeah. And I looked at this gentleman and I said, should it be easier? Like, who made up that rule? And so we had this whole conversation around we're connecting worth as a dentist, having been in the in the saddle for 20 years with things not going according to plan that are completely out of your control, and yet connecting the two.
Yeah, I mean,
Again.
I when you think about things that are completely out of control, I think of one of the things that I teach in Lightside Academy, which is the triangle of blame, where when you have complications, really anything in dentistry, not only complications, but there's really three parts to it. I used to think it was just based on me, how I prepped, how I did the bone graft, how I did the denture. It was me, it was all me. But you have, I can do everything right. And then you have the patient can even do everything right too. Their hygiene can be good, their recall, their diet. Even if both of us do everything right, you still have these other factors that we can't control, like genetics, right? That may be an unknown unknown. Or they need to eat a certain diet because of something in their life, or physics, biology that we can't control. And I think it's so important that we communicate that to our patients, and we also communicate that to ourselves. When you separate your profession from your purpose in life, you can give yourself some grace when some of these things happen. So, like I saw on Dental Nachos, there was a post the other day. What do you tell people when they ask, how long is this restoration going to last? And someone wrote something really nicely, and it's similar to how I explain it, which is how long this will last is based on multiple factors. One of those factors is how well I performed. I think I did the best of my ability today, and I think, from clinical research and what's being done around dentistry, I think it went pretty well. Now, if you did nothing and I held your tooth in my hand or put it on my desk, that would last forever. But you're telling me you're going to eat 1,000 meals this next year? You're telling me you're going to kiss, swallow, chew, breathe, potentially grind. And even if you don't do any of that, you still have biology and physics and all these other things that we can't control. And the answer really is, I don't have a crystal ball. We can look at what the research shows, but I think we need to be better at setting those expectations with our patients because our medical doctors do it much better. You get a hip replacement. They tell you, I'm making this up. I can't remember if it's 10, 15, or 20 years, but they tell you in 20 years, if you're still alive, we're gonna have to redo this. You get breast
And
augmentation, they say maybe 10 years. There's our medical colleagues are better at this, and it's expected.
I know you've heard this. I know we've heard this together when we do stuff together, and I know we've heard this separately. Dentists are always like, well, I don't want to downplay it too much because they may not move forward. So it's like, wait a minute. So let's tease out what you just said. Understandable. Not everybody says yes, but what you're telling me is you're not going to be completely forthright with informed consent because you think they might say no. Well, shoot, now you're backing yourself into a corner because if something untoward happens that you didn't happen to mention because you were afraid it was going to impact case acceptance, now what? Right?
So true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so true. And that goes back to some of the other episodes we've talked about. That goes back to boundaries. That goes back to tying your identity to your career. It goes back to start, stop, get better at things. Even building a healthy practice culture. I mean, part of the practice culture is how patients behave.
Totally.
And so I
Totally.
think that we need to set these expectations with patients to protect ourselves and also just to be forthright with them, just to be open and honest with people. You will not be open and honest about complications unless you're willing to lose the patient.
Correct.
And this was my problem, was I wasn't willing to lose the patient. Every patient that came in, I wanted to keep because my identity was tied to that. So I wasn't talking about complications, and then complications do happen because they happen, 2 to 4% of times, no matter how good you are, no matter if you're Frank Spear, John Coyce, Christian Coachman, Pascal Magne, whoever, complications happen.
They do.
And then you're backed up into a corner, and then we wonder why we have so much stress. So let's put a bow on this. This has been a fun episode looking back on 49 episodes that we've done. There's, most episodes are close to an hour, let's say. So there's so much free content with this. If this is your first episode, oh boy, you've got a lot to catch up on. But also, we do this weekly, so we're constantly having new topics come out. And thank you for those that have messaged us, told us that you've loved the podcast, that you're getting a lot out of it. We just got off a call, like Martin said, with a group coaching for people that have taken my LightSide Academy. And one of the doctors, Nick from Florida, said, "Love your podcast, Martin." I don't know if you saw that comment. Did you
I
see that
did, I
comment?
did. That was
Yeah,
very kind of him.
so really, really cool. We love hearing that. If you'd like to spend more time with us, if you'd like to go deeper with us, May 9th and 10th, we're doing a 2-day 12 CE really transformational course. It's in Irvine, California. And this is our Lightside Live program. We go through a lot of what we talked about today, but in depth and with
Yep.
examples, and we practice it and expand on everything. So, like Crucial Conversations is an example. You know, I think it's the second day, one of the last things that we do. One of the
Yep.
most powerful things that people talk about with this course is coming with a problem, saying, I have this hygienist who's 10 minutes late every day, or, you know, my spouse doesn't respect me in this way. I mean, it could be dental or non-dental, and how to go through these conversations. Just like prepping a crown, conversation communication is a skill. And so we have to practice this, we workshop it, we give you all the research behind it. It's my favorite few days of the year when Martin and I get together for this. And you can go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go to our links, and you'll find the link to our live event. Martin, any final thoughts from you on our 50th episode?
You know, I think, first of all, grateful that we're at this point and, you know, grateful for your partnership in this effort. I think it just makes me think also just about my life in general, and that one of the places I like to stay in as much as I can is the grateful place, because the research shows, it was a meta-analysis by Lubomirski, happiness leads to success, not the other way around. And if we keep looking to specific achievements as goalposts, when we get there, well, then the goalposts keep changing. And so, am I happy that we're at our 50th episode? Absolutely, you betcha. But what I'm happy about is not the 50th episode. It's about all the stuff that got us to the 50th episode. That may sound semantical, but here's what I can tell you. Truly embracing that concept can be absolutely life-changing, and it allows a more evenness to your, or it'll reduce the peaks, shall we say, of the highs and the lows, because we're never sitting there necessarily in a completely high or completely low place because of this perspective that we choose to engage in as we look at the trajectory of our lives. So.
Yeah, I mean, even when I think of how I've grown in this last year doing this with you, how much I've learned from you, how much I've been able to refine some of my own thoughts. I
Same.
feel like I've become a better communicator because of doing this podcast. So I am incredibly grateful for this journey as well.
Yeah,
I think just
absolutely.
our friendship growing more and more. I mean,
Yep.
we were already good friends, but just,
Yep.
you know, when you meet up for a few hours every week to talk, obviously,
Yeah.
that grows a friendship with anybody.
True.
So yeah, I'm incredibly grateful that you and I are at a point in our lives, in our careers, where we can do this as a free resource as well,
Yeah.
too.
Yeah.
You know, we have not taken on any sponsors yet. That may happen in the future. But we both have paid courses in person online. And when we started this, we wanted to create something free. Like
Yep.
if you're not ready to make the jump into a paid course, an in-person course, we wanted to create more resources, because when Martin and I went through our difficult times, this stuff didn't exist.
Yeah.
Podcasts. You know, I mean, yeah, when I went through difficult times in 2018, podcasts existed,
Yeah.
but not about wellness and dentistry, not about
Nope.
mental health. No one was talking about that.
Nope.
So we really wanted to do that, give back to our community that has given so much to us. So I'm right there with you in gratitude, and here's to 50 more.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks everybody for your support. We really appreciate it.
Thank
See you on
you.
the
Take
next
care.
episode of Wellness in Dentistry.